The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball, and welcome into a July hot stove episode, because we've decided that we're going to take a break from some clown takes this week, and we're going to really focus in on the Red Sox team this year and what their immediate and long-term future is, because there's only less than 2 weeks left in the month of June, and pretty soon the trade deadline will be here. And a lot of teams will be making some moves, and the Red Sox will have, I think, some tough decisions to make. So we're going to dive into it in terms of what their whole philosophy, their whole idea is heading into this trade deadline. They just wrapped up a great sweep of the Toronto Blue Jays. Their schedule is still pretty tough going forward, but we'll see how they do. They're a couple games over 500. They're in the wild card hunt, and again, that trade deadline will be here before we know it. So decisions to be made. So we'll see what they decide to do, and we'll dive into it. I'm your host, Jason Kelly, coming to you from Canton, Massachusetts. Joining me on this show from Boca Raton, Florida, by way of Centerville, Mass., is Jeremy Schilling. Jeremy, how are we doing?
I'm curious to see how much Terry and I yell at each other.
Tends to happen a lot on this show, I think.
It's these topics, like I said, I'm interested to see. I'm open-minded. We'll see what happens. I'm positive, optimistic, but something tells me it's going to go a certain kind of way.
I don't think it will, honestly. It'll be a different vibe than what you're expecting. By the way, I'm Terry. I co-host the podcast. You can find me on Twitter at CushmanMLB. Podcast account at Bastards_Boston. Find our Substack. That's a blog. It's panel style. We've had a few things on there. We haven't been busy this week. If you didn't listen to the very last episode, Cody Paulson has departed the podcast, and just basically a personal decision on his part. Basically, there's a lot more on his plate at work, and he just felt like he wasn't going to be able to, you know, put the time into the podcast. So we wish him well. So we're addressing the vacancy, and then we'll probably start cranking back out the blog posts at least two or three times a week.
Yep, absolutely. So yeah, you know, sad to see Cody go, but you know, we'll fill that position, and we'll keep on rolling, because it's been an interesting season. I think that, you know, all three of us here on this show, and I'm sure, you know, throughout all of our podcasts, we weren't quite sure where the Red Sox would stand, especially at this point in June. This was the toughest part of the schedule, and they're not just hanging in there. They're winning. They're winning games. They're beating teams that are, you know, better than them, at least in the standings. And it's great. And we're, you know, highlighting, you know, certain players that are playing really well, and that's awesome. But there is this lingering issue of the trade deadline that is coming up. And that's when a lot of teams that are ahead of the Red Sox right now will be aggressive, and they'll make moves, and they'll put their foot to the pedal and say, we're going for it. And a team like the Red Sox, they have a decision to make. What do you want to be this year? And that's kind of the question we want to address. What do the Red Sox want to be in 2024? Do you want to continue this trend of winning games? And, you know, you've got some young guys that have come up now that are really contributing and really making an impact. And do you want to add to that? Or is there still a long-term plan that you're more willing to sort of sell out for and say, you know what, this has been a good stretch, but at the end of the day, we have to do what's right for our long-term future and sort of deal off some pieces here. So I want to get your guys' take on just, we'll get into like some players later on, but let's just start with the overall just philosophy of the organization as it pertains to 2024. We know what it is in the future. Okay, they've built a farm system a certain way. We know what they want the team to look like in the future. But for 2024 and for specifically these next 2 months, what do you think the team and the organization wants to adopt in terms of a philosophy and an approach towards the trade deadline? So, Terry, I'm going to start with you on this one. What are your general thoughts? Where are you leaning towards in terms of what you think they're going to do and what you want them to do?
So we're 5 games above 500, like you said. Game and a half out of the wild card. We should be buyers at the deadline. If we're the Boston Red Sox and we're a big market team and we sat through all that rhetoric all winter long, we think this team could be competitive. We think this team could be competitive. And then come to find out, at the moment, it's very competitive. You have to be buyers. But I don't trust that we will be. And you could sell off Jansen and O'Neill, and but still make other moves to acquire starting pitching and one impact right-handed bat wherever that's going to slot in. I just feel like it would be unacceptable to not pursue that. And I don't trust this front office. And when you look at it, this is their last best chance to sell. If you want a clean house with all the pending free agents, Pivetta, Jansen, O'Neill, Martin, one or two other guys, this is your last best chance to do it.
Jeremy, what do you think?
So the way I break this down, guys, is there's three perspectives. Number one, ownership's perspective. Number two, the front office personnel, specifically Breslow. And number three, the fans slash the players on the big league on the big league club's perspective. Because I think there's a different answer for each segment of those three groupings. The fans and the team have spoken. Devers, who is not outspoken, has been outspoken. Last trade deadline, he was disappointed. In the offseason, he sat at the picnic table in Fort Myers and he was outspoken again. Breslow, he's trying to build a legacy as a front office professional to have a long career. And I think he is frankly in the middle of it and in the toughest spot of all, because he wants to build for the future and the present, which is extremely difficult to do. And then you have ownership that sucks, because the Red Sox are just an asset. They're not a baseball team. They're an asset. So I boil this down to the middle ground in the front office, because I think we know what ownership wants to do. We know what the fans and the team wants to do. What does Breslow want to do? What does he think is in the best interest of his career in Major League Baseball moving forward? And my biggest fear is that he's going to try to middle it and do nothing. Now, we know Heim did that repeatedly, year in and year out. He couldn't pull the trigger. You know, like he just couldn't do it. He was so afraid of making a mistake one way or the other. He did nothing. Perfect example. The writing was on the wall to trade Bogarts. He was so afraid of the fan backlash that he didn't end up doing it and then just let the player walk for no asset in return. So Breslow is acutely aware of that. And if he's not, he's dense and he needs to take an IQ test before they allow him to continue to manage this roster. And so when you talk about the players that you just mentioned, I think it's a case-by-case analysis. Okay? And the more they win, the more that ownership is going to have to empower Breslow to do what's in the best interest of the club. So for me, they need to be buyers. And I think if they continue to win, ownership isn't going to have a choice. You know, and we can get into the specific players, but for me, really quickly, if they continue to win, Jansen has to stay. He's your ninth inning guy. He's been really good recently. Part of that's because the offense is producing, so he's had more opportunities. O'Neill goes just because there's such a backlog. Willie Abreu's coming back. You're not going to move Ref Schneider, even though I think he's on a one-year deal too. But he's been so productive, so consistent. He stays healthy. Everyone's identified him, including the beat writers, as the leader in the clubhouse. Pivetta, same thing as Jansen. If you're winning, you can't get rid of effectively your number three starter. You just can't do it. You can't save face to the fan base. You can't save face to your clubhouse if you move that guy who, and we've discussed this on other podcasts recently, is kind of the ultimate competitor. Martin, it depends. He's older. He hasn't been healthy. He's had some other issues, which mental health is not something to be taken lightly. So if he's having mental health issues, I sympathize with that. But he's got a 4.03 ERA. If you can get a piece for him, no one's going to get upset. But it's a case-by-case analysis, generally speaking. They need to be buyers. Otherwise, they have to be if they continue to win.
So you brought up there's three different aspects to it. I think there's – and I'm glad you brought that up because I think there's three different approaches that the front office can take. And there's only three. And honestly, only two of them are viable. So one of them is that you sell aggressively. You blow it up. So anyone that's on an expiring contract, you're gone. Jansen, O'Neill, Pivetta. You know, you could even go further down the roster. You know, guys like Ref Schneider, you just completely sell out and you say to the fan base, we're pushing for the future. That's the least likely scenario in my mind, okay? Because I think that is egregious to do at this point, especially after back-to-back last place finishes and given the fact that you're winning games right now. You're not an embarrassment. You're not a bottom barrel team. You're in third place. You're in a wild card spot. So I think that's the least likely, and I don't think that's going to happen. So I throw it out there because there's never a 0% chance of something happening, but that's the lowest likely scenario in my mind. Next to that is mildly selling. So you trade off someone like Jansen, and you trade off Martin, but you keep other guys, right? Like, so you trade off those guys because they're on the last year of their deal. They're older. You've got Justin Slayton, who has emerged. You've got Bernardino, who has emerged in your bullpen. You've got other bullpen arms that have pitched very well. So you can deal away from that part of your team to help your farm system a little bit. You're not going to get a top 10 prospect for Jansen, but can you get a top 20? Probably. Yeah. Some, as Jeremy always says, some stupid team, some desperate team that's just outside their playoff bubble that needs that ninth inning guy, looks at what Jansen's been doing lately and goes, you know what? Yeah, we'll give up the number 15 prospect in our system for him. Sure. Yeah. That's what you're looking at. And then the other option is you buy. As Jeremy said, you buy and you don't sell Jansen, you don't sell Martin, and you low-key buy, because I don't think you can aggressively buy. You're not trading Mayer, Anthony, or Teal. It's not happening. Not with this front office. But could you trade Nick York? Could you trade, I don't know, Winkelmann Gonzalez, who's your only pitching prospect? I would hope not, but you never know. Could you trade someone like that for a controllable arm that you can add to your rotation and, you know, your pitching program still continues and you still push towards the playoffs? Maybe something like that. I think what's more likely is option two. You sell lightly. You sell guys like Jansen and Martin who don't have long-term futures. I know you're winning games right now, but again, I think you can find closers and you can pluck them off a tree. I really do. I think the amount of guys in this league who have become closers at some point in their career, I mean, I look back to 2013, Koji was a relief pitcher. Like, he was not a closer. He was a late inning reliever. He was a seventh, eighth inning guy, but no one, Texas didn't use him as a closer. You traded for him and he became a dominant elite closer for you. And yeah, it didn't last very long because he was older, but you can find guys like that. Kenley Jansen is, he's a very good closer, but if you ask me, like, ninth inning, do I have faith in him or do I have faith in Justin Slayton? It's pretty much the same. And Slayton's had some slip-ups, but you know what? I'll take it. Or do I have faith in Brennan Bernardino being your closer? Yeah, I do. I really do. The guy's been electric. If some team is going to give you a top 15 prospect for Kenley Jansen and you make Slayton or Bernardino your closer, go that route. That's the route I want them taking this year, because you're not out of it, but you're not fully in it either. They're sort of like, they're on the bubble, but they have like 1 foot in the playoff bubble. They're in such a weird spot, because we all expected them this month with that schedule to fall out of it, and they didn't. They won games. They beat the Yankees. They beat the Phillies. They're beating up on Toronto. We'll see what they do going forward, but they're not embarrassing themselves. They're playing good baseball. They're pitching pretty well. Their bullpen has been really good, and they're scoring runs. And this is without Abreu, without Tristan Casas. Those guys are coming back, so they'll be even better. I think their offense has a chance to make them so good that you can trade away guys like Jansen and Martin, and you can still survive and you can make the playoffs, or at the very least you're in the wild card hunt, which again, after two last place finishes, you'll take it. Because I'm sorry, but a large portion of the Red Sox fan base was screaming at people in April, this is a development year, this year doesn't matter. And Jeremy, I see you shaking your head, but this will lend to your point, because I think that's what ownership wanted them to believe. This year was a development year. This year doesn't matter. And you stupid, half of you stupid Red Sox fans bought into that. Oh, yeah, no, they're right. Oh, it's all about the young kids. Don't worry about it. 2026 is going to be awesome. Again, I've complained about it on this podcast for weeks. The big three down there in AA. That's what they're waiting for, not me. I think that you can make the wild card and you can make some noise if you get in. And you can do that while still trading away guys who aren't expiring contracts. Now, Jansen, Martin, do it. O'Neill, that's a hard one, because you can't depend on him to stay healthy. And I do think at some point he'll drop out of the shuffle. It's all going to depend on the return for O'Neill, but I do think he gets dealt too. But otherwise, you're in good shape. You can lightly sell and low-key buy and still get into the playoffs and make noise. That's what I want them doing. So, Jeremy, I'll toss it to you, because I know that you, as soon as I said Jansen's name, you shook your head. So go ahead. What do you think?
And look, I've been negative on Jansen all year, but he's turned it around. He's gotten healthy. He's stayed healthy. He's been productive. And he's a proven guy in the ninth inning. The ninth inning is a different inning, guys. It's a different inning. And what you're talking about, Jason, specifically is, well, Slayton could do it, or Bernardino could do it. And I don't disagree with that on its face, but where I disagree with it is you're specifically weakening other portions of your bullpen to make up for the fact that you want to move a player just to move a player. I'm not okay with that. Bernardino has served as a starter He has been nails in the biggest moments. I don't give a. I don't care. I almost swore. I don't care if it's the seventh, eighth, or ninth. What I care about is the best guy in the seventh inning. If it's the 2, 3, 4 spot in the lineup, I want that to be Bernardino, especially if there's one or two lefties in that spot. Slayton has proven to pitch in big moments and be able to throw multiple innings and be effective in both of those innings. You move one of those guys to the ninth inning because you just have to move Jansen, you're weakening your team. So I don't agree to the premise. Like, you pay Jansen closer money. He is your closer. You're winning in part because Jansen has pitched well, and we just are coming off the Blue Jays series where he was very good. I don't agree with Jansen anymore. 2 weeks ago, I agreed. I thought we should move him, but that was when we were a game under 500. We're not that team right now. As we are recording, we're 5 games over 500. We're a game and a half out of first place, and there's arguments to be made that we're better than Kansas City and we're better than Minnesota. That move makes no sense to me right now. So I go back to my O'Neill take, and I'm going to word it differently. If you're going to sell, you sell from a position of strength on your current roster. And where are we deeper than any other spot in the organization? Outfield. You have Duran established in left, probably going to make an all-star team. Rafaela, who's our future in center, and Willy Abreu in right. And Ref Schneider is the leader of the team. He's your fourth outfielder. And Yoshida is unmovable because the contract is too much and he's not productive. And then you have to add the injury. Yoshida's not going anywhere. Oh, and despite the fact that we are right-handed needy, we need right-handed power hitting, and O'Neill's providing some of that. Based on the factors, O'Neill's the guy that's out. So that makes sense to me. So when I talk about deciding on a player-by-player analysis, analyzing this thing on a player-by-player basis, it has to be done that way. We don't have any starting pitching depth, guys. Pivetta is going to start game 3 of a 5 or 7 game series in the playoffs. It's going to happen. You just demoted Criswell. If you trade Pivetta, it is the ultimate middle finger to the clubhouse, to the team. And I think that similarly with Jansen. So you just can't do it. Now, here's where I have a little bit of a problem with the offseason, to take a step back before we take a step forward. If you're just going to sign a bunch of one-year deals with the hope that they outperform the contract so that they are a ballooning asset to then move, this whole thing is just a disaster. If a player is outperforming and you're in it, they stay there and you just deal with the fact that you're going to lose the player for nothing. And by the way, if you're not okay with it, sign them. Sign them. You have the All-Star break coming up. There's nothing that says you can't have a talk tomorrow in Cincinnati. It's going to be 100 degrees. No one's going outside. Sit in the lobby of the hotel. Call the agent. Add a year to Bernardino. Add a year to Pivetta. Add a year to whoever. There's nothing wrong with that. Newsflash to John Henry, the organization and the team and the fan base is going to support that. That would be supported. Bernardino extended 2 years, $12 million. Everyone's going to love it. Pivetta, 2 years, $25 million. Everyone's going to love it. At least take your shot, and then the beat writers will tell us that the offer was rejected. And then maybe it heightens the pressure to trade him. But we're just not there yet.
Okay, a couple things. So I'm pretty good at market analysis when it comes to what a player is going to sign for in the years. I'm usually in the ballparks. Sometimes you get a weird short-term deal for massive money, and it's hard to predict those, but Pivetta is getting 40 to 60 over 3 years. That's going to be where he ends up, and the Red Sox aren't going to pay him that. So
I want them to.
I don't think I would hate it either, to be honest, but I just don't, I don't see it happening. Secondly, I don't think, I think trading Pivetta hurts us far more than trading Kenley. I would trade Kenley tomorrow for the right deal. I really would. And I disagree with Jason on the return. Look at what the Royals got for Kenley Jansen, for Aroldis Chapman last year. They got Cole Reagans. They got their ace. And I don't think the Red Sox are going to get that, but I think they're going to get something significant. I think it'll be a top 10 prospect at a minimum, because I think multiple teams are going to be in on Jansen. And I would do that early. And that Chapman trade happened early. That happened in June, if I'm not mistaken. It was well before the deadline. Secondly, I'm totally good with, I would have Justin Slaton pitching the eighth inning. That's where I would put Slaton, and I would put Zach Kelly in the ninth inning. After watching what he does with runners on base, he got out of a bases loaded zero out jam. I think it was it this series or the series before? That dude is, he's got an ERA sub two, I think. And I'm good with it. I'm good with it. This is the F around and find out season with your bullpen. Here's the other thing too. I'm not convinced that if Kenley gets dealt, I'm not 100% convinced that Martin will go too. He should, but perhaps they don't sell off on them both. But I'm totally convinced it's going to happen. I'll even make a wager with Jeremy if you want, on whether or not, Jansen gets dealt, but I think
he's going to get dealt. I don't like it. So the answer to your question is I will make a wager with you, but I'll be requesting odds like 2-1 or 3-1. Because I think he's going to get traded. And the bullpen has, and we've discussed this on the recap series for the last, like, effectively 2 weeks. Like, the bullpen's been great. And is there a closer in there? Yeah, there's a closer in there. I wouldn't be surprised if they went with, like, situational closing. Like, it could be Bernardino because there's two lefties in there, and there could be Slaton. And the great thing about Slaton is he could pitch the eighth and the ninth. So I'm not disagreeing with that side of the point. I'm disagreeing with the fact that you have an established all-time closer who's pitching effectively on a team that is ascending currently and just dealing him just because he's in the last year of his deal and we can save $5 million, which will effectively be what's left on his deal by July 30th, because I think he's making $16 or $18 million this year. Then why did you even go into the season with him as your closer?
Well, they shopped him.
That pisses me off.
They shopped him and they botched it, in my opinion.
And we don't know the details of that. And obviously there was the rumor with the Phillies. But, like, it makes no sense to – okay, so then why did you sign O'Neill? Now, as it were, I agree that he should be traded because there's a surplus of outfielders. But why did you sign O'Neill? Why did you only sign Pivetta to 1 year? Because your goal wasn't for him to pitch well so that you can compete. Your goal was that the asset would balloon and then you could turn Pivetta into two or three prospects. That's such a loser mentality. And I know it's from the ownership. Again, it's not the fans don't want it. The team doesn't want it. Breslow's career may rest on, like, he may only get two seasons.
I hope it's only one.
It's such a loser mentality, and it pisses me off. What'd you say, Terry?
So I hope it's only one. I'm not going to get my way with that. But
I think the Kenley situation, Kenley himself messed that up because he showed up to spring training super late, and then he was hurt. He got hurt, like, right away, and he's like, well, I got my, whatever, hamstring back, my ass hurts. Whatever his excuse was, he came up with a bunch of them. So I think they wanted to trade him, But I think other teams around the league looked at him and they went, he's 36, 37. Like, he's already having health issues. Like, he showed up late. And I know a lot of guys show up late at that age, but I agree with Terry. I think they botched that. They probably should have traded him or should have tried it back at, like, the winter meetings. They shouldn't have waited until the spring. But I think they waited too late. And a lot of that was because it took them forever to get Breslow in as a GM because, whatever, 15 other guys turned them down. So, you know, that search took long enough. When it comes to, like, so you guys mentioned O'Neal. It's, what are you going to get for him? Not much. Not much. Again, we highlighted it on the other show. As great as he is, he only had one season where he played over 100 games. So you're not selling great assets here. And that's why my whole take was sell, but, like, you know, don't expect a great haul back. Sell lightly. And I highlighted Jansen and Martin because they're two relief pitchers over 35 that are probably on the back ends of their career. Like, probably have like a year left of greatness and then they're done. O'Neal, it would suck to see him dealt, but I would understand it. He's going to be a free agent. He doesn't stay healthy. Yeah, he's fun to watch when he's going off, but, you know, how long is that going to last? The unfortunate thing about selling O'Neal for what we want is, like, and I assume we all want the Red Sox to compete, go to a wild card, or at least try to get into the wild card, is that he's your best right-handed power bat. So, yeah, you can sell him and see what you get for him, but your lineup does weaken as soon as you do that. So this is the issue the Red Sox have, is that, like, Jansen to me makes sense. I'm sorry. To me, he does. I know, Jeremy, you disagree, but, like, to me, he makes sense. He's on the last year of his deal. He did not show up this year ready to go. I don't think he wanted to be here. He, you know, had health excuses early on. To me, he's a goner. Beyond that, Martin, if he can get something for him, maybe. I kind of agree with you that at this point, you might just have to ride it out with him. Maybe if he turns it around, you make him the new closer. I don't know. We'll see. O'Neal is a hard one because he has been contributing when he's been in the lineup, but he's on the last year of his deal. Like, and he's probably not going to stay healthy, but at the same time, you will not replace that right-handed power. You won't. Yes, Costas will come back in your lineup. Hopefully, he produces some power, but who knows? It's still so early in his career. Like, you don't know with him, and you have no other right-handed power in your lineup. Connor Wong is not going to replace that power. He's not that kind of batter, and you have no one in the minor leagues. All your minor league guys are lefty, so I want them at least to explore Jansen, explore Martin, and see what you get in terms of calls for O'Neal. Because I think at this point, I'm on the side of, if you get embarrassing bad offers for O'Neal, you keep him and you let him walk. Get as much out of, like, squeeze the juice out of that orange as much as you can this year. Get into the wild card. Get into the playoffs. See how far he can bring you. Because I don't think Tyler O'Neal walking and signing with a new team is going to hurt you in the long term. I think in the long term, that contract, like, whatever he signs, you'll look better for it. That's kind of where I'm leaning with him. Just get as much out of him as you can. Keep him healthy. Hopefully he hits 30 bombs and he helps you. If you win the wild card series and you get to the ALDS or whatever, like, I'll take that at this point. It's not a last place finish. That's fine. Because I don't think you're going to get a top prospect for him. So what's the point? Like, why would you bother doing that deal? You're going to trade him for what? Someone like Alex Pinellas? Like they did with Hunter Renfroe? Alex Pinellas sucks. You got David Hamilton out of that deal, and Hamilton is actually turn into something, which that's great, but I don't need that. So that in terms of O'Neal, you know,
well, that part of it I agree with, Jason. I mean, look, if it's a nothing deal, don't make it. And despite my position on the surplus in the outfield, if there's not a trade that provides you an asset, then you don't make the deal. I'm assuming there's one dumb team or two dumb teams. So, you know. And to that respect, I do think you'll get better offers for Jansen, and it will be harder to say no. So that's a whole different aspect to the conversation. I wasn't going to propose trades. I wasn't doing that, you know. But, look, you go into a season with five, six, seven guys on one-year deal, and you're competing, you're going to have to ride it out, compete, and lose the player. Or – sign him. I know that's a ridiculous concept for John Henry, but spend some goddamn money.
So with O'Neal, I mean, I've already gone through it. I mean, we've got a robust outfield without him. Once Abreu comes back, and assuming that Rafaela's trajectory continues upward, even if it's not even a steep upward, you're getting more than you imagined out of Rafaela already. So the one team, I'd almost be willing to make a wager on this. He's going to the Braves. They desperately need a power bat in their outfield now that Acuna's gone. And they're in a similar situation to the Red Sox, to where all their outfielders are lefties. So they need a righty at bat, and I think that's the team to do it. Now, keep in mind, they did fleece us for Vaughn Grissom for Chris Sale. So, you know, hit them hard on this one and maybe force them to take back Grissom. But that's going to happen. A couple things here. One of the reasons why I think not acquiring assets and going for it is unacceptable is because look at the World Series last year. On August 1st, who had the Rangers and the Diamondbacks going to the World Series? I didn't even have the Rangers into the playoffs. I was the only host on the crew that had the Diamondbacks into the playoffs. I had them in the third wild card, and I declared it as my upset special. Never in my wildest dreams did I see them going to the World Series, but they did. And if you make smart moves, I mean, to me, the biggest priorities here, you need a righty power bat, not named Tyler O'Neill, and you need a starter, a number three starter that's got a good record of health. That's a successful trade deadline to me. If you get any bonus pieces, any low-key under-the-radar moves, that's fine too. I want to ask you guys this. Two questions. First one should be a quick one. Do you guys agree that the 2021 playoff team that we had, it got two games from the World Series? Would you agree that from a business standpoint, that was a massively profitable season for the Red Sox?
Yes.
No.
You don't think so?
No. Nope.
I think they made tons of money that year.
I'm sure they made money. Well, okay, from a business standpoint.
That's what I mean. Strictly from that.
I guess so. I'm not sure. I don't think so.
What would be your basis for saying no?
Because I think Boston fans are smart enough to know that team sucked and they weren't going anywhere.
No, I'm just talking about the money that came in. From
money that came in from TV and stuff. Yeah, okay.
We were competitive all year. We almost blew it, but we didn't. Then when we got in the playoffs, we were hot for a week and a half, and we got close to the World Series. Okay, so here's my next question. At this stage of John Henry's ownership, would he prefer that route with a team that's going to be profitable with a much lower payroll? Or do you think he still prefers to go back to the glory days, exceed the luxury tax, not necessarily blow by it, but get well within that first threshold and then go for a ring? Because to me, I think he prefers the 2021 model at this point.
Are you setting me up? There's only one right answer here.
There is. No, I prefer the glory days, but what does John Henry prefer?
I prefer go sign Manny Ramirez, go sign David Ortiz, go get Curt Schilling at Thanksgiving and roll with every big player you can get. I want to beat the Dodgers. Let me be very clear. But anyone that thinks that's what John Henry wants is on crack cocaine. Because, I mean, and I don't, Terry, I don't even think they care if they recreate 2021.
Well, I don't think they care. I think they have to. I mean, you can tell.
Terry, the Boston Red Sox are an asset. As long as it's profitable, they don't care. That's been so clear. 2021 was an aberration. The fact that we got where we got, and my God, I'm thinking back to that moment because I think we were up in that series, and I was like, oh, my God, we're going to go to the World Series.
We're up 2-1.
We're up 2-1. It was what? Benintendi's catch, right? We felt like we had all the momentum and like we were going to win that. That is pure icing on the cake from ownership's perspective. Pure icing on the cake. They don't care about winning. They care about profitability. That's it. And guess what? We have become a laughingstock because no one from New England is going to the games. But does John Henry care if it's still a sellout and it's 70% Yankees fans or it's 70% Phillies fans or fill-in-the-blank fans? He doesn't care. They're making money. For whatever reason, he doesn't care that no one's watching Nesson. I'm still trying to understand the money on that, but he doesn't care. If they go on a run, it's a pure bonus, but that's it. He doesn't care if we win. Go ahead, Terry.
Yeah, so if the bar is set below the 2021 model, we're not going to be profitable because fans won't go. And you've already alluded to it. It's the away team's fans that are showing up. And, I mean, but here's July. You got the Marlins in the first week, the Athletics in the second week, the Royals right after them. You're not – their fans aren't coming. So you're going to have to have a somewhat attractive product. Now, I think Red Sox fans are pretty naive. You know, you get, you know, a fringe playoff team that we would consider it based on our analysis. That would be more than good for your casual pink hats that are going to buy the tickets anyway. They're going to be fine with that. But I don't think we're going back to the Dodgers model. I mean, they have an intense phobia about long-term deals, not even long-term deals anymore, midterm deals, 3 to 4 year deals for starting pitching. We're not even getting those anymore. There's an intense phobia there. I think John Henry wants to stay away from that. And when you look at these young guys coming up, our entire outfield, for instance, I think John Henry is just going to be more and more obsessed with that aspect of it. And if you've got a good, smart front office that can develop these guys, then that's fine as long as you can continually do it like some of these teams do. The Astros and the Dodgers and even the Rays really have had a pretty good offensive team now for the last 4 or 5 years. But I don't know that we're going back to the glory days. I don't know.
We're not. Stop wondering. We're not, Terry.
That's what I'm getting at.
Yeah, why would you? Because, so you mentioned those teams that are coming in before the deadline. Sure, yeah. Those teams don't travel well, and he doesn't have to worry about that because he'll still sell tickets because the team's playing pretty well, or they should be by that point. Look at after the deadline. There's bigger markets coming into Fenway. Toronto comes back in, Baltimore comes in, the Yankees come back in. So even if they sell at the deadline, he's still going to fill out Fenway. He'll still get 33,000. They won't sell out. They're not selling out anymore. Despite what they'll tell you, they're not selling out. but they'll get 30,000 plus every night for at least August, maybe not September, once, you know, college football and football starts up and all that, but they'll still sell out for the most part. So that's it. He'll be fine. So like that's the issue. It's just, we're sitting here going, what makes sense for the team? You brought up the ownership question. Like, ownership would be so thrilled if this team won 81 games, missed the playoffs, and still sold out. Because if they went in as a wild card and they don't have home field advantage, that doesn't do a thing for John Henry. He doesn't care. You know, but if you sell Jansen and you sell off these big contracts and, you know, you can lower that team payroll but still be better than you've been the last 2 years, he's thrilled with that. So ownership doesn't give a bleep. Ownership just wants to sell tickets, keep the payroll down, stay out of the luxury tax, and not be totally embarrassing, which, you know, in a way, this team is doing that this year. They're actually competing, and they're on pace to actually be pretty good. But, like, the glory days of winning 90-plus games and leading your division and actually being in play for, like, big-name players, no, that's over. So it just – when it comes to the deadline, like, I still think they low-key sell because I think that's what ownership wants. And I think ownership will convince Breslau because Breslau's just – he's new. He just got in there. And they'll put pressure on him and say, you know what? Sure, you could go trade for this player, but you know what? Let's dump Kenley's contract because we got a bunch of young guys that can fill his spot and we can still win. And then we'll be well under the luxury tax. We'll have a lot of payroll, and that's what we want. And I think that's what they're going to enforce on him. So I have a sneaky feeling that this is like a 81, 82 win Red Sox team. They'll just fall short, you know, at the end of the year, making the playoffs. But the owners will be happy because they won't spend a lot of money and they'll dump some contracts. That's the way I see it going.
August is a brutal month. You got the Rangers, the Royals, the Astros, the Rangers again, the Orioles in a four-game set, the Astros again, the Diamondbacks, the Blue Jays is a cupcake series. I don't know what the Tigers are going to look like, but they've been a pretty good second-half team the last few years. It's just the first half. And then in September, you basically have the division the whole month. Well, I guess I shouldn't say that. You got the Twins, the Mets, and but you also got the Rays, Yankees, and Orioles still. You got the White Sox in there. That didn't go well the first time.
And keep in mind, most of those teams that you mentioned will add at the deadline. Apart from, like, you know, the White Sox, Tigers probably won't, but, like, most of those teams, the Twins, they'll add at the deadline. They can win their division. Like, so you're going up against teams that will definitely aggressively buy at the deadline when you don't. That'll be a problem.
And here's July again. This is why it's going to be interesting. You got three games against the Marlins. You got three against the Athletics. You got three against the Rockies. And, you know, there are a couple other tough teams in there. You got that Rockies series as part of a West Coast swing, which will bring us into Dodger Stadium. Mookie, how long did they say with him? They said at least a month, which sounded optimistic to me. But still, that's a month where we could be 10 games above 500. And I can't believe I just said that, but the way things are trending right now, it's almost like it should almost force them to go for it and get a couple of pieces. And what's the rhetoric going to be if they don't? It's going to be fascinating. It really is.
Unfortunately, the rhetoric from, so again, the fan base is split. The rhetoric from our side, and I think the correct side, will be they didn't go for it. They don't care. They're punting. You know, ownership intervened once again and we're not going for it. The rhetoric from the other side will be, well, why would they? The 2025, 2026 team is going to be awesome. Mayor, Anthony, and Tio are coming, and they're going to be all superstars. So why are you all complaining? It's going to be great in the future. Bloom built this team for the future. Long live Chaim. This team's going to be great. So it's just like that's how split the fan base is. I think we are on the correct side of saying that's a stupid way to look at it, and they should compete. But there's so many Red Sox fans that just they've lost their teeth. They've lost their passion and their fire, and they're just like, yeah, you can punt on the season. That's okay. I'm willing to wait. You know, you can finish in last again. We'll be great in 2 years. It's like it's gotten pathetic. So, you know, and this trade deadline, you'll see much of the same because they'll sell pieces and you'll see people on Twitter that are not us going, yeah, good move. Yeah, oh, build for the future. That's the way to go. It's pathetic. So, I don't know, but like I wish that like you're right that like if they didn't buy and they didn't commit that people would be pissed. I just think Boston's changed. I think Red Sox fans have changed and they've just gotten a little bit soft and they're like, yeah, we'll just wait till 2026. Marcelo Mayer will be an MVP. Kyle Teal will be the next Adley Rutschman and we'll just win then. Which, you know, yeah, that's it.
We didn't talk about trading Duran or potentially Wong. And I think at this point, I don't think that's going to happen, but the chaos, if it does, is just, and they would obviously be like full blown sellers if one of those two were ever traded. So again, it's going to be fascinating. And Chaim had analysis paralysis, as they all called it. Breslow's looking okay. That Richard Fitz guy is, you know, although he did get tagged pretty good in his second to last start, but I don't know. His trades haven't killed us outside of the Grissom trade. So we'll see. We'll see what happens there, but that's what we got to look forward to, guys. A trade deadline.
Yeah. Yeah, and certainly the big first test for Craig Breslow in terms of in-season test. So we'll see what he decides to do and how this team is performing. But with that, we will wrap up this episode. So everyone enjoy the Cincinnati Reds series this weekend. The Weekend Crew will have you guys Monday morning to recap all of that. And we will talk to you guys next week. So everyone take care.